beat the Blackhawks like a rented mule, and the Penguins win it in overtime. And the Penguins lead 3-1. Oh, go ahead, make my day. He jumps and scores on a slap shot. He beats goaltender Nabokov, who doesn't know whether to cry or wind his watch. And again, Spence on his left, coming to the opposite, puts it a pass, in a goal. Hey! Jumps and scores. Sidney Crosby buries it on center avenue. And the Penguins have a 3-0 lead.
Talking sports in the afternoon. This is the Big Show on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
I get the significance of the song.
Yeah.
I don't get the significance of the Mike Lang.
I just love Mike Lang. Last time, well, I worked, I guess, the first round.
Yeah.
And Ryan and I were back and forth, and I found, actually, wasn't in there, but Mike Lang busted off the "She Wants to Sell My Monkey," which is absolutely the greatest thing in the whole world.
Right.
So I just thought we'd take the two best of both worlds and kind of combine them.
I understand the song, because, can never live down using that song as an intro
song. Live down.
Never
live down. I stand proudly behind that song compared to some of the crap.
Boom, 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 boom.
No, you're missing that one altogether. We had that one, too.
Did you? Of course you did.
See,
what is
Ryan,
that again?
I could bully Ryan. I was a little, not fragile, but Bachman Turner over.
Right, BTL, right.
When you were here, I can't bully you around. But Ryan, I could still bully around. So I was throwing all my old favorites in there and everything.
we can listen to some of the old favorites. Maybe we'll just make a segment of it. It'll be easy for us. We'll just play the whole song. Something
tells me, my friend, we have far more pressing things than that.
We got a lot to talk about, because just before you came in,
yeah.
I lit up the phone boards. Well, I didn't, but our listeners did.
Right.
For about 10 minutes there, because I asked the question straight up.
Mm-hmm.
If you were the Calgary Flames, would you have made that deal? 3 first-round picks for the number one overall pick. Our good friend Elliot Friedman reported that on the Satellite Hot Stove. Yep. Again, I keep calling it that. On the Hot Stove on Hockey Night in Canada on Saturday night. And immediately it got people buzzing. And look, the report is that they offered and Colorado said no. But I still thought, hey, it's still a fun topic. Would you have done
sure.
it? I said, absolutely. I would have done it if I'm the Flames. And so that lit things up. And now all of a sudden, if it wasn't already the biggest topic around this organization, the draft takes center stage once again. Just a couple hours after,
meanwhile,
we had news that Brendan Shanahan was in town to meet with Ken King and Flames Brass about who knows what. Mm-hmm. We don't know. There's speculation. So there's a lot to talk about when it comes to Flames land.
Well, and you bookend that with, Pat, that Friday was the availability with Jay Feaster. And Jay spent a half hour plus with the media, came out, you know, made his openings. And that's one of the things I've learned to really appreciate about Jay Feaster, is that he comes right out and doesn't even take a first question. He just jumps right in both feet and,
yes.
and sets the scene. So we can get into this a little later on. But, you know, one of the things he said right off the bat is we've exercised options on Chris Snow. We've exercised options on John Weisbrod, the assistant general manager. We're bringing back the assistant coach, goalie coach, and Clint Malarchuk. We're bringing back Jamie Pringle. We've exercised the option on Troy Ward. You know, at the time, okay, it's work. I mean, it's business, but it's not, you know, the biggest thing. As a matter of fact, I think, you know, and this is going to be very condescending, and it's not intended to be, but it was amazing to me how the thrust of most of the stories the next day had to do with the fact that Feaster made a joke about the rebuild. Oh, okay, I've been to therapy. I'm willing to call it a rebuild.
Yeah, yeah.
We seem to be more taken with that than kind of the day-to-day business, so to speak. But all of that has a different context, even his comments about the draft trading. I mean, Jay has, Pat, you had Jay in trade deadline. And I think the table was set for what they might do leading into the draft then. It certainly was at the end of the year. I think the Calgary Flames have been as public as anybody can possibly be about we're open for business and we'd like to do things. I think reality is there's not a lot to deal. I mean, there's not a lot of prospects that they're willing to give up, and they don't have a lot of extra prospects. I mean, you look at what, you know, Pittsburgh was able to do to deal with Jerome McGinley without affecting their major prospects. Mm-hmm. St. Louis was mm-hmm. able to do the deal for Jay Bouwmeester without effect. Calgary's not. Calgary, look, when it comes to prospects, the cupboards aren't bare. But anybody who has a family knows that this is a team that desperately needs to go to Costco for a big shopping trip when it comes to prospects. They need to fill those cupboards. So am I surprised that they did the deal with – or did the deal? Surprised they called Colorado? No. But if you listen to Elliot Freeman this morning with – can you play just – I guess the
yeah, here's
first
the,
one.
Here's the clip that we played last
Boomer
hour.
And Pete. Yeah. It was interesting how, you know, the further you get into this, this sounds to me more like due diligence than an actual offer.
Here's Elliot Friedman from Hockey Night joined the program or joined the morning show this morning.
They made the offer, and, you know, what happened was Colorado's thought about it and said no. And I think that, you know, I asked a few people for their reactions to it, too. And they all said that Jay made the offer probably knowing it would not be accepted. They said it was certainly worth a shot because the first couple of players, you know, are that special. And, you know, when they thought about it, if they were in his position, they probably would have tried the same thing. And, you know, the other thing, too, is that there was only one person who I asked who thought it would be a bad move for the Flames. And his only complaint was that, you know, the Flames are really trying to rebuild. Would you rather have three first-round draft picks than the one? But they all agreed that if you think there's a player there that is your corner, that is a cornerstone guy who can change you that much, it's worth an attempt.
So two things there. First of all, to me, it is due diligence. Whether you think the Avalanche are going to say yes or not, I think you have to have the lines of communication open. I think you have to say, hey, look, what are the opportunities here of us moving up and maybe getting ourselves into the top three? And here's a little bit more from Friedman. We haven't played this clip yet, but he was asked, hey, is this a possibility where it's more than just the Avalanche? I mean, the Panthers have number two, the Lightning have number three. Have the Flames reached out to them in his eyes?
Would I think that they have tried it? Yes. Do I know that for certain? No, I don't. The one thing I'm hearing, though, is that the biggest problem Calgary has to do it is that the teams in the top four don't want to move out of the top four. Like, you know, Patrick Waugh is on record saying if they move down, it's no later than three. And I'm hearing from about Florida, if they move down, it's no later than four. Mm-hmm. And I'm hearing that Tampa Bay and Nashville don't really want to move at all at this point. And, you know, I think the other thing, too, Colorado, if they're going to move anywhere, they want an established player in the process. And I think the fact that Calgary was offering three draft picks was not as exciting to them as maybe if they were offering a good young player and those draft picks.
So that's Elliot Friedman of Hockey Night in Canada joined the morning show this morning.
Do you believe they've offered, made contact with the other four teams?
Absolutely.
I absolutely do. Do I think that they went to, you know, Florida and said, okay, we'll give you three? Do I think the three first-round picks were, you know, in play for, you know, one through four? No, I don't. But I'd also add to this that you were working. I wasn't. I was just kind of getting this casually on the side. But when they introduced Patrick Waugh in Colorado, one of the things Waugh did right out of the get-go was say, you know, we're not above moving the pick.
Yep.
You know, we'll look at everything. We just want to make the hockey team better. Okay, if I'm Jay Feaster and I hear that, hello, what about this? And to me, it's often been said to me, because this is such a frustrating business, somebody comes up and says, well, this is what I heard. And Elliot Friedman has been quite upfront about this. Neither the Colorado Avalanche nor the Calgary Flames will confirm this. He's comfortable with his sourcing. And I, you know, you hear something about involving the local hockey heroes, and you go, what can you tell me? Can you confirm or no? We're not going to confirm or deny. But I've been often told, you know, there's so many things that get talked about that never come to fruition.
Oh, absolutely,
right. And we've never heard about it. And the other thing I want to caution people is the whole Jerome McGinley to Boston. And I think that little lesson there, I think, needs to apply to all of these stories. You know, there's a little bit of a hands-off for me and just kind of waiting to see how these things play out. We'll deal with Shanahan in a second, but back to the trade. Pat, you asked the question, would you do it? And what was your answer?
Absolutely. Mm. Sign me up.
Would you make the offer, or are you talking about consummating the deal?
I would certainly make the offer, and I understand why the Avalanche wouldn't. And it kind of underlines my kind of belief that I've had ever since we've known the Flames are drafting number six, and we've had talks, and we get texts every day. Do you think they could package and move up? Do you think they'll be I don't think you're going to be able to move up. I think it's going to be next to impossible to get yourself into that. And this underlines that belief to
me. That's what I was told about a week ago, that you're, you know, the Flames pick might be the first one that comes into play.
Right.
That 1 through 5 might be rock solid where they are. You know, it just seems to be that kind of draft. Look, the comparisons are to 2003. And if you look back at the 2003 draft, Anaheim did pretty good picking late in the first with 2. You know, coming away with Corey Perry and you know, Ryan Getzlaff.
Yep.
I don't think there's any shame in
it. Philly had 2. They had both Jeff Carter and Mike Richards.
And they were later. You know, and
Carter was in and around where the Flames. I think Carter was 9, and
yeah,
Richards was.
But they're not. No, they're not
they
top
were,
5 picks.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
And this is my whole thing about the draft is, you know, everybody. Well, why didn't the Flames take Shea Weber? Why didn't the Nashville Predators take Shea Weber?
And
he
28
was their third pick.
Yeah.
They took Kevin Kline ahead of him.
And Ryan Suter.
Ryan Suter. Well, okay, Suter makes
Suter, you can understand.
Right, but they took Kevin Kline. That's the whole thing with the draft. I believe I was promoting something with you, and we got in on the radio, and we went into this conversation one day, and I said, I feel like at this particular moment, I'm more interested in volume of picks than I am about moving up. So to answer your question, just to be a counter to you, no.
McKinnon. It's only because it's McKinnon for me.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that's why you won't move up. If it was...
Agreed.
If it was Yakupov, I don't know if, you know, or if it was Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, who knows? You know, I tell the story all the time about going to the Columbus draft in 2007, and I am absolutely convinced as I stand here that the Chicago Blackhawks were within inches of trading that first overall pick, which turned into Patrick Kane.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they bring Patrick Kane out to the media, and guess what? He's got a Velcro name bar. You know, there was lots of thought that the Flyers wanted to flip and move up. You know, I don't know if it was to take James Van Riemsdyk or to take Patrick Kane, but there was a lot of talk that pick was in play. Who knows? Maybe this pick will be in play. Maybe there is somebody. You know, and we can go further into this because I think it morphs into this whole conversation about Brendan Shanahan, and then it morphs into all these conversations about these coaches. There is a real belief out there. Now, there have been real beliefs before that haven't, you know, fermented. But everybody I talk to believes there's a lot of resetting going on, that there's a lot of teams that are taking a good hard look at, you know, I there we go. There was a story today that San Jose, we don't believe in rebuilding. We want to retool on the fly. Ooh, where have we heard that before?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of teams that are looking that maybe this is the time to reset the button. You've got the buyouts. You've got all of this. You've got all these coaching changes. You've got teams like the Flames looking at maybe restructuring their front offices. I believe it's going to be an active trade deadline. And I believe the Calgary Flames are in a position that they can't move up, but could they move back and collect something else? Because right now they have 3 in the first. I don't believe they have a second-round pick because there's went to Montreal in the Camilleri.
And they have not recouped as of yet.
Right. The Calgary Flames since 2000, and a lot of what we talk about with the draft this week, for me, I reset the button to 2000 because that's the first 30-team draft. Now, 2005, they went from 9 rounds to 7 rounds. That changed as well. But for the most part, since it's been a 30-team draft.
And this is year 3 without Daryl Sutter at the helm.
But since they went to a 30-team draft, the Calgary Flames in seven years have moved their first-round pick back and collected a much superior pick in return. Now, you know, whether or not they drafted the right players, I think we could all agree their drafting record's spotty at best, and that's being very generous. But I do like the idea of collecting picks because as you look at the draft, man, I'm here to tell you, and all due respect to the John Weisbrods of the world, all due respect to the Doug Murrays of the world, all due respect to, you know, all of the so-called wonder scouts and everything, to me, the biggest key in restocking and redeveloping and finding second and third round picks that turn out to be Joe Pavelski's and that, it's volume, it's sheer volume, having those picks. And I think the Calgary Flames realistically need to have 2 or 3 drafts of 10-plus picks, you know, where they're in the first round. They're in the multiples into the second round. Hey, the Oilers had it. I think it's safe to say right now that the Oilers have mostly first-round picks to show for it. Who knows what's going to pan out from the last couple of drafts. But you look at Chicago when Dale Tallon was in charge. Dale Tallon had a ton of second-round picks, late first-round picks. He's done the same thing in Florida.
Yeah.
And I really believe that that's critical.
And I'm like, I don't dispute that. Mm. And only because the name McKinnon's involved,
yep,
do I really say,
absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. So my gut all along has been the Flames are taking their three first round picks and they're using those three first round picks at the Prudential Center. Like, I think they're using all three, and I don't think we're going to see one get
moved.
I'd
be shocked if one doesn't get moved.
Now, in what sense?
I think there's two possible scenarios.
You think they're going to move into the second round?
I think they could move one for multiple picks in the second.
Yeah.
I think that's a distinct possibility. But I also think it is possible that they may find a suitable trade partner to make something happen at the NHL level that it involve one of the later picks. I wholeheartedly believe, Pat, that they will draft within the top 10.
You have a very odd look on your face.
I just think there's...
You think they could make two in the top 10?
No, I think they can move back and get another pick. Right. Sorry. I wouldn't be surprised if they move back. I don't know if they can.
They're number six, you mean?
They're number six. I wouldn't... Would it shock me if somebody like, you know, whoever's an eight or nine says, comes calling on the... I think those phones on the draft floor are just going to be humming.
Yeah, I think the Flames will be one of the hubs of activity.
And I would say Nikushin, Nurse, Monahan, those types of players, and I might be wrong on Nikushin, but I think those three types of players... We know McKinnon's and Jones are going to go 1-2 or at worst 1-3. Strong belief that Drouin's really being eyed by a couple of teams.
Mm-hmm.
The young Russian player who played over in Finland, or sorry, who am I thinking of?
Barkov.
Barkov. Thank you. Is he Russian or is he?
No, he's Finnish.
He's Finnish. Yeah,
Finnish with a Russian name.
Yeah, Nikushin.
Nikushkin's Russian.
Right.
He played in the KHL.
Right.
Barkov is a Russian.
Sorry,
name.
The Finnish player with the Russian name, I believe, is going to stay in the top four. But I believe that once you get into the picking of Monahan, Nurse, Nikushin, that could trigger, somebody saying,
right,
geez, we like Hunter Shinkarik. We think, you know, we want to jump up to get him. We like whoever. We Max Domi, maybe his, Bo Horvat, seems like his stock has risen, right? Maybe we're going to make that move and jump up.
I still think they're going to make all three of their picks. I do. Let's see, if you were to ask me right now, I think they'll try.
Yeah.
But I think that if you were to ask me, they'll make all three of their picks. And, you know, so they don't have technically a second-round pick. You can make the argument that the Pittsburgh pick could be a second-round pick. It's a really high second-round pick.
And that's how you frame it. I mean, look, when they signed Brian Cameron, Daryl Sutter came out and said, we didn't have a third-round pick in this draft. This is our third-round pick. Oh, okay. Well, he was a third-round pick for the LA Kings who didn't sign him, so I guess that all makes sense. You know, you can get the other thing that Jay Feaster told me that I thought was priceless was, you know, he knows, he's adamant that he knows the media always loves the general manager who comes out and says, we didn't think he'd fall to us. But it happens every year, and they really do believe that they do their lists. Everybody's going to get tied up in ISS. They're going to get tied up in Hockey Futures. They're going to get tied up in TSN. They're going to get tied up in Sportsnet. They're going to get tied up in Central Scouting. And they're going to say, wow, he went here and there and there. The Calgary Flames do not use any of those. None of these teams.
I'll go back and pull a clip for later this week, but John Weisbrod told us last year, prior to the draft in wherever it was, Pittsburgh, and he said, look, there are four or five players.
Six guys
that were ranked in the top 60 of a lot of these lists that they don't even have in their top 60.
And conversely, there was guys that they had in their top 30 that weren't in everybody else's top 30.
And the Flames
Jankowski be prime with that, right?
And the Flames aren't alone in that.
No, that's how everybody does it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think that it got a lot of people angry when they heard that. They're like, well, what do you mean? But every team does that. And you know, whether the Flames draft record is good or not, you want your team, Flames or otherwise, to put their resources into their drafting and have their scouts have their opinions, make their list based on what they think. You want that to happen. You don't want teams to be like, actually, no, we're just going to follow ISS. We're just going to go on what, you know, one scouting service has. Not to say that ISS is bad,
but there's
more resources.
Yeah, exactly. And it's about staying true to that list. So that, again, goes back to, do I think the Flames will pick in all, it's 6, 22, and 28? No, I don't. I think there'll be some movement in there. And my guess would be, and it's purely on historical data that they'll move back to try and gain a second round pick. I'm excited that this news comes out that they tried to get up to first. Good for them. I think the one thing that you cannot say about the Calgary Flames, it's funny how the Avalanche always seem to be involved, but they have not just sat with grass growing under their feet. They've tried to make things happen. The Ryan Riley thing nearly blew up in their face, but they tried to make something happen. You know, this news comes out here. I don't think it's anything more than due diligence, and I'm not trying to take any of the thunder away from Elliot Friedman. But I'm not surprised they made that move. Again, to Elliot's point, to your point, do I believe they've contacted the other teams below them? Absolutely. Let's not to be overdramatic here. What's the one team they haven't called by this point?
I don't know.
I think they've talked to every team in the league. Yeah. I think you have had to have talked to every team in the league. Don't you?
I would think so. This is the most important time in your organization's future or history in some minds.
That's what they keep saying.
You have to make sure you do every single piece of due diligence.
Are you going to the draft?
Are you going to the draft?
I'm going to the draft.
Yeah, we're both going to be there. And Boomer's going as well. We've got your NHL draft coverage starting next week. We leave a week from Thursday, and then not this coming weekend, but the weekend after. All kinds of wall-to-wall draft coverage. We got four sponsors for you. Shaganappy Insurance Services, LTD. Pete the Plumber! Varsity Chrysler. And how about Bluegrass Nursery Sod and Garden Center? Now that hockey's ending for the season, it's time to spend some time outside. Visit Bluegrass Nursery and Garden Center for everything to brighten up your yard. Just south of Cross Iron Mills or bluegrassnursery.com.
And they've been around for a long time, involved with the draft too, Bluegrass.
Absolutely.
And the other thing I'll tell you about Pete the Plumber, I happen to know for a fact Pete the Plumber won himself a new watch last Thursday. So you will get even better service now from Pete the Plumber because he is on time. He won himself a brand new watch.
He's the superhero.
He's the superhero plumbing residential plumbing team.
We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll focus in on the Stanley Cup Finals.
Are we going to talk about Brendan Shanahan later?
At some point.
Okay.
We got bogged down in lots of conversation about this.
About what?
This draft thing. There's lots to talk about. When we come back, the Stanley Cup Finals resume tonight. Series shifts to Boston, and we'll head there with Darren Millard next. You're locked on The Big Show, Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Game 3 of the Stanley Cup Final tonight here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. We've got it for you at 6 o'clock as the Bruins now get to be the home team for the next two games after getting a split in Chicago thanks to Dan Pailler's overtime winner on Saturday night. The Sportsnet panel and the Hockey Central panel is in Boston. We heard from Darren Millard as part of Hockey Central at noon, and now he joins us down the Subway Restaurant's Fresh Take Hotline as we get set for Game 3. Darren, appreciate this, man. What's Boston like? Give us the buzz in Beantown.
Boston is one of the coolest cities that you're ever going to visit. It is just, it's old, it's got personality, the population is extremely passionate about their sports teams. It is one of the best places on the circuit that we could visit.
Tell me your thoughts on what we saw in the first two games in Chicago, overall what you've seen in this series and why we are where we are right now.
I think you saw two games in which Boston got off to slow starts in the first period. Well, dramatically in game two than game one, but a team that got better as each game went along. And if they can come out of the gate with any type of zip, any type of closeness to their regular game, it's going to be extremely difficult for the Chicago Blackhawks. Boston, well, they lost game one, won the battle physically. And they certainly did that in game two. I think the shots were 19-4 in the first period of game two, but the hits favored Boston by a 2-1 margin, and that maintained the pace throughout the game. So I think you're seeing the strategy of the Boston Bruins is to drill them, and wear them down. And that worked in game two, and I'll be curious to see is whether it translates over. Chicago just couldn't they're just not big enough to match up with the Boston Bruins. I think they've now realized that, and they're going to go back to their game. And Stahlberg's going to come out, go in tonight. That's going to give them some speed. Bullock, I don't think it was just because of the blunder on the winning goal, not getting the puck out when McQuaid made the nice pinch. But he's going to come out, and Stahlberg's going to go in. They're going to try and beat the Boston Bruins with that north-south game, a little bit of speed, and try and beat them with their game and score some goals, which is something that the Blackhawks have struggled with here. They've got some bounces in game one, but they haven't been able to put the puck in the net with any type of regular.
Hockey Central's Darren Millard joining us down the Subway Restaurant's Fresh Take Hotline ahead of Game 3 of the Stanley Cup Final tonight in Boston. Darren is in Massachusetts right now. I know that both teams have that feeling, and we've heard from both teams, and you know they feel that they could be up 2-0, or at least we've heard from people who cover the teams that there could be that feeling. If you were to take a look at it from both sides, what team has maybe a better case that they should be up 2-0?
I think it's the Boston Bruins. They were outplayed in regulation in Game 1, but were by far the better team in overtime. And remember, they had those two-goal leads in Game number 1 and let it slip through their fingers. And in Game 2, while they weathered the storm in the opening period, they came out and controlled the play in the second, the third, and the overtime. So I think Boston, while they've both gone to overtime, Boston has the edge in the opening 2 games, and then they get that much-needed split, and Boston's been so dominant at home, not just just this year, but go back to the Stanley Cup run in 2011. I think that the next 2 games have a real potential here of tipping in the favor of the Boston Bruins and allowing the Eastern Conference champions to gain control of the set.
If you were to take a look back as to what happened between the first period and the remainder of that game on Saturday night, you kind of touched on it with the physical play there, but did anything change for Chicago, or did all of a sudden Boston just start playing their game a whole lot better than what we saw in the opening 20?
Well, I certainly think that the Boston turned up the volume on their game, and that started with Chris Kelly took control of that dressing room, and then everybody else jumped on board. During the intermission, that was there's a spirited exchange between a number of players to get their butts going in that first intermission of game two. But I think the other part of it is the Chicago Blackhawks were like a prize fighter. You come out and you throw everything you can at the opposition, and you just can't knock them out. You can't knock them down, and then you all of a sudden you kind of realize maybe I expended a little too much energy. Maybe I didn't accomplish what I needed to accomplish, and there was a bit of a letdown by the Chicago Blackhawks, and that's all that the Boston Bruins needed to get back into the game and get some confidence underneath them. The other part about it was Nathan Horton was not very good in that first period, and I actually thought after one he might come out of the lineup because of a shoulder that he hurt in game one when it popped out. And I thought, he's so ineffective, they just take him right out and put Seguin up on that line. Instead, Claude Julien obviously gave him some rope, and then Julien made the nice change in putting Kelly, Paille, and Seguin together on the third line and really almost benched his fourth line, went with more of a three-line attack. And that gave Seguin some confidence, playing with a little more skilled players. And he had his best game in probably 2 series for the young player. And you saw the results on the nifty feed on the winning goal. So I think there's a couple of different things that happened there.
Darren Millard's with us. He's joining us down the Subway Restaurant's Fresh Take Hotline from Hockey Central in Boston prior to Game 3 of the Stanley Cup Final. You mentioned Tyler Seguin. He's getting a lot of run after Game 2. What have you seen from Tuukka Rask? And not so much just in these 2 games, but overall in the postseason. Would this be his coming out party, or is this the underlining of what Tuukka Rask is an NHLer?
Well, yeah, it's definitely his coming out party. And what's impressed me, and we now know from 2011 that Tim Thomas was such a great story, but there was a background to Tim Thomas that we weren't aware of, and that he's a pretty quirky guy, and he does some off the wall things, and that came to the surface with the White House visit, and then the Facebook page, and then walking away from the game, and the players weren't appreciative of a lot of that stuff, and I think it's you're seeing that now. Tuukka Rask is on a heck of a roll right now, but you're hearing from the coach and the players and management that he's playing better than Tim Thomas did in 2011, and I find that just hard to believe, because Tim Thomas was a record-setting goaltender, but that's how much they love Tuukka Rask here and appreciate him as a teammate, in the sense that they're going all out to give him as much credit as they can. I'm not taking anything away from Tuukka Rask. He has been splendid. He's got the 96 save percentage the last couple of series. he's done everything possible, but they're going out of their way to heap praise on him and make sure that he's in the same category as Tim Thomas was when he won the Conn Smythe in 2011.
On the other side, Corey Crawford threw two games in net for the Blackhawks. How would you rate his play?
Well, I thought that game one was the best game that I've ever seen Corey Crawford play. He was steady. He was spectacular. He was athletic. He battled. He was as good as Corey Crawford could play. And I thought I was really happy for him because I think he answered a lot of the doubters, the people that are still questioning whether Corey Crawford can be that Stanley Cup champion type goaltender and win a game for his team. The book on Corey Crawford is just don't lose the game for the Chicago Blackhawks. But could he ever step up and outperform the other goaltender in a back-and-forth, high-quality game? And he did that against the best goaltender in these playoffs in Tuukka Rask. Game two, I thought he was clunky. He fought it from the very start. That long shot, 25 seconds in, and I thought he had a little trouble finding his groove. Played well, obviously only gave up two goals in four periods, but I didn't see as confident of a goaltender in game two. And tonight he's going to play in this building for just the second time in his career. And we'll see what kind of challenges that offers up. He lost 3-0 to the Boston Bruins a couple of years ago. He and his goaltending coach, Stefan Waite, were going around and firing pucks off all the game boards and wraparounds. And the Zamboni actually comes out in a weird spot where he'll play in the second period tonight. It comes out on the side instead of right. It comes out in the sideboards right before the corner instead of traditionally in the corner. So they were shooting pucks there to see what kind of weird bounces may come their way. So they were certainly doing the research in a building that he's very unfamiliar with.
What do you expect game three tonight at 6 o'clock our time?
I think the Boston Bruins are going to come out and do exactly what Chicago accomplished territorially in game two. And they're going to, just instead of pounding shots, you're going to see some hits. Milan Lucic has absolutely owned Oduya and Chalmerson, and I think that you'll see some of that out of the Boston Bruins. This is a really tough building to play in for the visiting team. Vancouver proved that in 2011, and I think that this is Boston's game tonight. It's there for the taking. I think there's a really good possibility you will see the Boston Bruins up 3-1 after 4 games.
Darren, as always, appreciate this, and we will talk to you again very soon. Thank you so much for doing this.
Got to go get some chowder.
All right, Darren. Darren Millard in Boston from Hockey Central joining us down the Subway Restaurant's Fresh Take Hotline. We've got game three of the Cup Final here on Sportsnet 960. The Fan starting at 6 o'clock. And you know, I kind of get the same feeling that Darren does. I mean, I kind of get that feeling that Boston's ready to really make a big step to start a game. You know, I know they took the lead in game one, but probably wasn't overall the start that they wanted. And Chicago was able to chip away at that. And certainly the opening 20 minutes on Saturday night was not the way the Bruins want to play. So knowing that and knowing that they have found a way to get a split in Chicago and now are coming back home, that's probably as big a focus as anything else. And obviously, you don't focus on just your start, but I think making sure that you're not flat to start is exactly what the Bruins will be focused on to make sure that maybe they can carry things through the way they want to for 60 minutes as opposed to starting it a little bit later on in the evening. And that to me is kind of what I would think could be the number one key if you're Boston heading into tonight. We'll take a break. When we come back, more on the Flames. We got plenty of conversation in there on the draft, and we got plenty of talk as to what they might do come June 30th, but who's calling the shots come June 30th? Who's the guy at the top? I don't really know if that's a fair question to ask, but it's been asked a ton over the last couple of days. It's next on the Big Show, Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Well, the meeting was on Friday in Calgary between games one and two of the final, and Brendan flew. I assume just flew in for the day. So when I got to him on Saturday, he did confirm to me that, yes, in fact, he was in a position to talk to Murray and Ken King about a job within the organization. There was no specific, it's the president or it's the head of the hockey ops or whatever. So, but yeah, that's exactly what's happened.
Talking Calgary Flames hockey in the afternoon. The Big Show on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
It's John Shannon of Hockey Central. Joined the morning show this morning on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. And all about the other Flames story.
Yes.
Hey, how about Saturday? Hey, Brendan Shanahan was in town yesterday. Oh, and Elliot Friedman just said they offered 3 first-round picks for the number 1 overall pick. No shortage of Flames talk. It's like, thank you very much. For my first day back after being on vacation, gives me a pretty easy day to get back into it in terms of generating stuff to talk about. Steinberg and Kerr along with you. Welcome back to the Big Show. That, of course, was about Brendan Shanahan, who we now know was in our fair city on Friday.
Wait. Let's do it this way. What was your gut when you heard it? What was your gut response?
I thought, oh, Brendan Shanahan's in Calgary. I didn't go to the hockey ops part and the, oh, he's going to join the Flames until after the pieces started getting put together for me. That partly is because I was in a vacation state of mind.
Sure.
and maybe in an inebriated state of mind.
Ah,
but that was
nothing wrong with that state of mind.
No, that was initially the thought that I had. Oh,
not only is he going to run this thing, he's going to sell the popcorn. Too.
He's going to be the new host.
He's the new host of the big show.
That's what I thought at first, and then I started reading. Okay, well that makes sense. But my initial gut feeling, once all the pieces were put together for me, was. It kind of sounds a lot like the John Davidson rumors from one summer ago. And that's kind of the feel I get in that, hey, I'm sure that tires have been kicked and rocks have been turned over and that type of thing, but I'm not ready to go down the road that says, oh, this is imminent. Brendan Shanahan's the new director of hockey operations. He'll be hired on Friday.
I would almost bet everything I own that this is not the first person they've talked to.
Oh, absolutely not.
That they have had this conversation before. My initial reaction was somewhat of confusion. Because, again, everybody talks about these rumors, right? Nowadays, we can always fall back to that. Well, there were rumors. But there was always conversation throughout the end of the season, the spring, even during the lockout. Because the Flames took over the Stampeders, that there was going to be this Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment West. That, you know, the Flames were going to, you know, looking at a building. And that's the other thing. I've said this ad nauseum. Calgary, if you don't think the Flames are right smack dab behind the Edmonton Oilers in planning and preparation for a building, you're mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they have to go through the same hoops that the Oilers do and will, but in terms of the planning, they're ready for that. So there's a lot going on. But I was told as recently as a month ago that there was nothing imminent, that, you know, status quo, away you go, and that, you know, this was really about, and something you said about Jay Feaster. This is Jay Feaster's third draft.
Yeah.
Really, technically, only a second as the full-time, no conditions added to it. You know, this is John Weisbrod as the assistant general manager in charge of player personnel's second draft. They are really, you know, beginning to undertake what needs to happen here. One of the things, I often go, and I don't even think he's in town, so he won't even be able to hear this. One of the most brilliant things that Bruce Dobigan ever said on this radio station, and I can count them. I've got a small list. But he did make a great point, Pat. No, Bruce, he's a good guy. Coming out of the last lockout, Bruce was in that category that didn't like the fact that there was going to be parity and really felt like, you know, why are we doing this? But his point was, there is no salary cap on intelligence. There's no salary cap on brain power that you watch. The real teams will just balloon their hockey operations department, that they will, you know, they'll have incredible... It didn't happen right away, but boy, it's happening now. And you can put the Calgary Flames into that category. And I've, you know, before I left here, and even every once in a while when I come on here, I often talk about how much the Flames have added to development, how many bodies they've added to scouting, how many bodies they've added to hockey operations. My point with all of that is being they just got back to where everybody else is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we're talking about coaching changes this summer. We're talking about, you know, some general managers moving and shuffling. Like, for instance, it's interesting to me how we've all jumped to this conclusion of this is what the role will be. What's standard about anybody's role anymore?
Yeah.
Like, Patrick Roy is what?
He's the head coach and vice president of...
Right. And Greg Sherman remains general manager.
General manager.
So if I want to make
Joe Sakic is the executive VP of hockey operations.
So if I want to make a trade with the Colorado Avalanche, who do I call?
Well, you probably call Patrick and that's Joe,
right?
But then you have to go through Greg for the logistics. And
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That we're really beginning to see this. We used to think it was head coach, general manager, and then president. And president had nothing to do with hockey. He had everything to do with season tickets and beer prices and everything. That's gone out the window. You look up in Edmonton, you know, how their structure is now. You look at what Vancouver, you know, Vancouver, you had Mike Gillis, who'd never been in hockey operations, been a player, his agent comes in and he gets a presidential, you know, a vice presidential role. I'm more than anything, I'm intrigued about what the end result will be here, whoever it is. If it's Brendan Shanahan, if it's I believe everybody's now saying Coley Campbell might be in this mix.
Joe Nieuwendyk's name has been
been
thrown in there.
You know, and we're going to have Al Mackey on later on, because Al Mackey wrote in the Globe and Mail on Saturday a pretty, probably the most precise article to date about exactly how much, you know, control that position would have. But I don't know, Pat. You've been around this organization long enough. I've been around this organization. None of this stuff comes from Calgary. None of this information comes from Calgary. This all comes from external sources.
Yep.
It always is. It always does. It always will. This is an organization that prides itself in being close to the vest. This is an organization that if life were to work out the way they wanted to work it out, this would have been an announcement today. We would have gone into a press conference, and bang, we would have all been blindsided. Jerome McGinley would have been traded. We would have all been blindsided. This information...
We kind of were. The team he went to.
Right, exactly. And, you know, and again, the Flames don't work with a lot of leaks. I get that. Is it frustrating? Sure, we'd all like to know what's going on. I'd love to come on here and say it's A, B, it's C, and it's D. I don't know what it is, Pat. I don't know what it is. Hmm. If you hire Brendan Shanahan, what does Brendan Shanahan come in? Does he have carte blanche to hire a whole new hockey operations department? That kind of flies in the face with what Jay Feaster was saying when he met the media on Friday. Because Feaster came out and said, he's back, he's back, he's back, he's back, he's back. Well, if you're about to make some sort of life-changing hockey operations department, and it's going to come down pretty quick,
yep.
Something tells me extensions could have waited until we all at least got to know each other.
Well, and to go back to your original point, I've kind of always felt this is the direction that they will eventually go in, is that... Hey, you know, the model of Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment and having the guy who's on top, which in this case is Tim Leiweke,
right.
And then having his underlings controlling the teams. You know, Brian Colangelo is the president of the Raptors, and now Masai Ujiri is the general manager, and we know Toronto, all that. That's probably the way it's eventually going to go here in Calgary. They've got all four major sports entities. I believe that's
maybe,
going to be the way
it
goes.
Maybe a professional basketball team down the road.
The Calgary Drillers?
While you were gone, they want to put a new pro league actually, I know the guy running it, Kerry Kaplan out of Hamilton.
We got the Calgary Crush.
Right. Anyway, there's a new
play it safe.
Canadian-based basketball league, I should say, and this is kind of unique because they came out last week and they said, we're a new league. Who wants in? So I know immediately people called the Flames and said, are you guys getting a basketball? Well, they wouldn't rule it out. Of course you're not ruling it out. Anyway, I distract you.
No, I just thought that's kind of cool. But anyway, yeah. I understand what you're saying.
It's interesting. It's an interesting analogy about Tim Leiweke, though, because you look at where the Maple Leafs were and are. The Flames are a little bit more removed from regime change, but Brian Burke gets gunned in January. You know what I mean? And now Leiweke comes in. There hasn't been wholesale changes to the point, although his role is a little bit different than I think what they're talking about here.
Yeah, and so I think that they might eventually go in that direction. Doesn't mean it's going to happen by the end of the Stanley Cup final. Doesn't mean it's going to happen by the start of next season. At some point, sure, I think it's going to go that way. And that's why when we heard John Davidson's name linked to the team, now when we're hearing Brendan Shanahan's name linked to the team and others as well, it's not overly surprising, because I do think at some point they're going to bring in another type guy like that to be the head of the Flames organization in some way or some form.
Do you think Jay Feaster's on the clock?
Not any more so than he was before this news came out.
Right.
I think Jay Feaster is now at the point where he no longer has, and his regime no longer has that built-in, excuse is the wrong word, but that built-in default that
buffer.
Says, you know, okay, we were making up for some of the moves that we felt were mistakes under Daryl Sutter, mm-hmm. and now we're trying to get back on our feet. I think that time has passed. I think now everything Jay Feaster and his regime is being judged on is just that, without any type of mitigating circumstances. So whether it's the Ryan O'Reilly thing, whether it's what happens on July 5th, yep. whether it's this draft, whether it's the Dennis Wiedemann signing, the Yuri Hudler signing, or the Jerome Iginla trade, it's all based on the here and now. No longer is it linked to Daryl Sutter.
But it's, to me, it's interesting. Well, what have the marching orders been? What have the marching orders been? The marching orders were, you know, Jerome Iginla's coming back, Mika yep. Kiprusoff's coming back, we got to be competitive now. And it was only after that failed miserably that they came to the realization that the hockey world had been screaming at them. And I'm not saying that it was right or wrong, I'm just saying, it's this whole thing about, you know, coming out and saying, oh, well, now we'll call it a rebuild. You know, there was a lot of exasperated people here in mm-hmm. Calgary and around the hockey world that thought the Flames should have done this 3 or 4 years ago. They didn't. They chose yep. to do it now. That's why I'm a little reluctant to suggest that there is any more pressure, any less pressure on Jay Feaster and his hockey operations department. I all due respect to Mr. Mackey, and he's coming on later, and I'll be happy to talk to him about it. My gut tells me that whoever comes in will inherit this organization's, will augment this organization's hockey operations department, that it won't be with the idea of, what, you're going to fire another coach?
Yeah.
I mean, there's some teams in this league, and the two in Alberta are among them that desperately need some stability. You know, the Flames have to have stability at the coaching position, and have to have stability in the hockey operations department. I think the Oilers have to have stability at the coaching department. I think they need to have stability at the front office. That's fair. You know, you look at Ottawa, we all thought Brian Murray was done. When they went into that team.
I remember it was you and I working the day that yeah. that they traded Mike Fisher.
Right the down
Sens,
at the Dome.
The Sens yeah. had lost the game the night before
yeah.
and then made the deal the next day. And I thought he was done.
Right.
I did not think he was coming back.
No, we were all talking about, well, who's going to inherit the job?
Because yeah.
would it be his son who was part of it? Would he get gassed? Well, Brian Murray stayed. And there is some, you know, a little bit not so much in coaching if they had that. But who has it? Outside of Nashville, you know, Buffalo got rid of Lindy Ruff. But you do need some continuity. And I would hope that, you know, whoever they bring in just augments that hockey operation stuff. Look, important, absolutely. Is it going to happen real quick? I don't think so. But this is, I really believe, Pat, in my heart of hearts, that this is an organization that needs a few good things to go its way.
Mm-hmm.
That its fan base deserves some things. I think they got it. You know, for a game and a half with Mark Kunderi coming in, and, you know, what a performance he had in Minnesota. I think that got everybody excited. I think Benanowski coming in and scoring, you know, Max Reinhardt, those types of things. But they need to have some of these deals. They need to, you know, I would be shocked if the Calgary Flames do anything earth-shattering in free agency. I really just don't see. You look at the crop, it goes against everything we've been told about post-Apex players. This is mostly a group of 30-plus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Dave Clarkson, I believe, in New Jersey is the one that's going to be everybody chasing.
Yep.
You know, maybe Bozak to a certain extent. Look.
Some interesting goaltenders that are
yeah,
out there.
But,
yeah,
but I'm, you know what? You've decided you're not bringing back Irving, you're not bringing back Taylor. Go with these guys. Go with these guys. You play your young guys. You know, and it'll be curious to see what that influence will be if somebody else comes in. I thought you hit the nail on the head earlier on, and I'm not sure it was the first hour, it might have been, it must have been the first hour, when you said it may not happen. The fact that they talked to Brendan Shanahan, the fact that they talked to other people, maybe it does. You know, probability suggests they're close if they're bringing people in for interviews.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe it doesn't happen. And you
it didn't happen with John Davidson, and I fully believe that there was contact, plenty of contact between the Flames and John
that.
Davidson.
I don't believe
no.
that. No. There might have been a cursory conversation. I don't think they ever went as far as clearly as Shanahan.
As sitting down and having dinner?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think John Davidson would have loved to have come home, but I'm not sure that at that time the Flames were necessarily as aggressive as a suitor. And what I would hope too, and I'll just, you know, I'll add this. I hope this is the tip of the iceberg. I hope that, you know, the Calgary Flames are clearly one of the more have teams in this league. Is that the best way to put it? They do well. I think it's,
in terms of bottom line,
right.
Yeah.
I would hope that they continue the trend that they have shown in terms of pouring resources in. You know, I'm excited that they've done things like bringing in Chris Snow. I'm excited that they've done things like Jamie Pringle. I'm excited they got a goalie coach, you know, down in Abbotsford. You know, I think Abbotsford's another issue they've got to deal with. I really do believe that at some point they're going to have to find a probably an easier travel destination. I think it's nice to be able to have the closest.
It's geographically close here, but it's so far
it's killing
from
them
elsewhere,
on the road,
yeah.
Right? You know, yeah. And again, we haven't even talked about Seattle, but how about Elliot bringing up the fact that, you know, even if Vancouver had put a team into Seattle, that would have done wonders for Abbotsford. And who knows, maybe it's a flip in a couple of years and, you know, Abbotsford becomes Vancouver, Calgary goes to Seattle. But the fact that the NHL says no, you know, here the Heat are left to blow in the wind. Make no doubt about it. The Canucks want to be in Abbotsford. Yeah. And sooner rather than later, that'll happen, whether it's the next couple of years. But I just hope that the Flames can, yeah, bring in whoever. Bring in a president of hockey operations, great. Continue to augment, continue to go out. And as I said it before, Pat, they have stuff in the cupboard. They do. But they have to go to Costco on a big buy because they need more. They got a
big
buy
shopping cart.
They got a
yeah.
big. They got to do a big,
big
bulk
buy of
the
gummy bears.
You know, I'm pretty excited. We haven't even talked about it, but prospect. You know, if they pick all those guys, they'll have them at prospect camp, and that's coming up in July. They're going to have a bunch. You know, Jay talked about it. They're going to have more college free agents. They're not getting the Danny Kaisers right now. Yeah. They're not getting the Justin Schultz right now. But they have to continue to do that work so that down the road they can.
Okay, got a couple of things that we got to get into. We're going to go around the NHL next because not only do we have to talk,
I get that.
We get to we got to look into the Stanley Cup final.
Right.
You and I haven't had an opportunity to talk about that. We will do so to kick off the next hour. On top of that, New York Rangers have themselves a new head coach.
Sure looks like
and it.
It
looks like the Philadelphia Flyers have got themselves inked a new defenseman. All of that coming up before we get to 3:20.
Severe thunderstorm watch for the city of Calgary, Drumheller, Three Hills, Cochrane, Old Sundry, Rocky Mountain House, Carolina, Red Deer, Pinoca, Innisfail, Stettler, an alert for potential development of severe thunderstorms this afternoon and evening with large hail, damaging winds, and heavy downpours. I say this to all of the parents in girls under eight soccer. It could be wet tonight.
What was the, when we had David Spence on a couple, what was the special instrument?
The the Stevenson screen.
Stevenson screen.
Absolutely.
Rob Curran.
If they
Stevenson
get me a Stevenson screen, I'll start doing more timely updates.
Joining us here on The Big Show on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Back in a second.